for this period while we're looking at some of the suttas from the Atthakavagga, I thought, and we'll continue on with others from the Sutta Nipata. I thought that would be a good idea to take some of the themes from the suttas that we're studying and then use them in a more reflective way for the Dhamma talk. So that's for this evening. I'd like to give a talk on the subject of aging, the topic of the Jara Sutta, which we just recited. Papang vata jivitam idam. Alas, short is this life. Most we live for around 100 years, a bit more or a bit less. Statistically, if you make it to 16, you've got a 1 in 4 chance of making it to 100. So most of us have all made it a bit further than 16, so we've probably got an even bigger chance of making 100. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but anyway. When the Buddha described aging, he used this kind of very vivid physical description of the breaking of the teeth, the greying of the hair, the wrinkling of the skin. So I look at myself, and as far as broken teeth goes, I'm going extremely well. Most of my teeth are quite broken. I've provided a lot of entertainment for dentists for many years, and hopefully will do so for many years to come. Graying of the hair has been going for a few years now. It's getting greyer every year. Wrinkling of the skin has started. And I'm kind of middle-aged. I'm about halfway through a kind of a normal full life. Then you can still kind of feel the difference. You don't have quite the same energy that you used to have, or realize that the physical problems that you have aren't necessarily going to get better. And when you're young, you always think. You always think that you'll heal. I think this is why teenagers and so on are so, and kids are so careless about, cutting themselves or breaking a limb or whatever, because their experience has been that when something breaks, it gets better. And of course, as you get older, one of the things you begin to understand is that, well, it doesn't actually get better 100%. And as you have more and more of these things gradually, the body starts to become more and more decrepit. And so that's essentially what aging is. It's just a realization that gradually the body is falling apart little bit by little bit, and that while there might be ups and downs in the short term, in the long term, that's all there is. It just keeps on falling apart until eventually it falls apart completely, and that's what we call death. Aging, as I understand it, is a bit of a mystery in biology. I understand that there's no sort of particularly compelling theoretical reason why organisms have to age. I mean, cells and so on are constantly renewing themselves, new materials and so on. And of course there's a lot of effort these days directed by scientists and so on to try to slow down or perhaps even reverse the aging process, all the way from, that goes all the way from fairly sensible things like looking at diet and exercise and so on, to things of much more marginal utility, like cosmetic surgery and so on, and all the way to some fairly fringe efforts to stop aging altogether. For example, to freeze people so they can be brought back to life and all of these kinds of things. So this is one of the basic functions of human culture and human technology, is to try to ward off aging, try to preserve us in a healthy way as long as we can. Which in itself is quite reasonable, but what it tends to go along with is this kind of attitude of denial of and avoidance. And almost this kind of feeling that we can artificially separate these things. We can separate birth, aging and death. We can be born, we can age to a certain degree and then freeze it where we want, at our ideal age. So there's this kind of unconscious feeling, I think, that many people have, that they want to... We would like to be able to have birth and grow up to some degree, but without dying. I think this is what lies behind this whole idea of heaven as eternal life. We somehow imagine that if we're in a place where we weren't weighed down by this coarse biological organism that we call our body, that somehow in some spiritual realm we'd be able to last forever. We'd still be able to be who we are, but we'd be able to live forever. And this is a kind of very appealing idea, and as far as I understand it, is pretty much the basis of most of the world's religions. And of course, one of the problem is that, and it's one of the things that the Buddha pointed out, is that birth, aging and death as a process and as a cycle, it's not just something that humans have. It's not just that it happens to be the case that we in this realm go through this cycle of birth, aging and death, but it's a universal truth. Wherever you look, things are always following this cycle. Whether it's on the smallest scale of the quantum level of the appearance and disappearance of particles or energy waves, or on the huge scale of the cosmological cycles, the birth and death of universes. The same cycles we see in the weather, we see in the trees, we see in ordinary artifacts, even in land cruisers. Even a land cruiser will eventually get old and die. I know it's very painful and stressful to have to acknowledge that fact, but one day, even the land cruiser is going to have to die. So it's this universal truth. Everything, always, is like this. And this is, I believe, one of the fundamental insights of humanity, one of the basic understandings that underlies human culture everywhere. And as many of you know, I have an interest in looking at mythology and the different ways, the different stories that people tell each other in different cultures and different times and places, to try to make sense of the world, of what they experience. And in mythology all around the world. One of the universal themes, and in fact almost like a defining theme of all mythology, is that it talks about these cycles. It gives stories about the kind of the cyclical birth, death, birth, aging, death, and then rebirth. And whether these cycles are experienced in the stars or in the seasons or in human life, the great myths are always going round in circles like this. Or spirals, perhaps. So it seems to me that this tells us something quite significant about consciousness, about the human mind. That we're confronted with this, we observe this reality of aging and death. We see it in the animals, we see it in the fruits, and we see it in the leaves. And the stories that we tell are ways of making that conscious to ourselves, of reflecting on it, of acknowledging our part as a player within that cycle. Birth, aging, and death. So once we acknowledge that, then as a part of nature, then we're no longer judging it. Birth, aging, and death no longer becomes something which is either good or bad. So normally, we tend to judge these things, don't we? Birth is good. Death is bad. Aging is more of a mixture, because when we're young, we want to grow up, and aging is kind of seen as a good thing. We're praised if we become taller, or if we learn new things, or if we get more mature. But then, once you get past a certain age, then generally aging is seen as being a bad thing, which I don't think it necessarily is, but that's how it's often perceived. But once we reflect on it more, we begin to realize that it's not something which is good or bad, it's something which just is. And so it's an existential truth. So these kind of existential truths are things which we don't have to do anything about, but we just have to realize them. And in fact, when we realize them, then very often we stop feeling compelled to try to do things, do anything about it. We realize that this is just the way nature goes, and so we live with it. We appreciate it. And because we're not so caught up in it, because we're not involved in favoring and opposing so much, then we can appreciate this cycle. And actually, for example, actually aging, even though people it's often thought of as a negative thing, but actually aging isn't something which is too frightening. I actually look forward to getting older. I'm glad I'm older than I was. That makes sense. You get older, you understand things better. You have more of a sense of your place and appreciation. Well, I understand myself better now than I did when I was younger. So, and as we get older, we usually have more wisdom. Wisdom of experience. We usually don't have so much compulsion to try to prove ourselves, to compete, and so on. So it's a more reflective time. So this is one of the things I really like about Jung's philosophy, Jung's psychology rather, that he talks about how at each stage of our life we're faced with new challenges, new things that have to be learnt. And one of the things about that is that the answers that we had when we were young don't necessarily work when we get older. The way Jung puts it, he said, what was true at the dawn maybe a lie at the sunset. And I think that's also something which is very important to understand. We do change as we get older. It's not just a physical process, but also a mental, a psychological process. We do change. And the fact that we're different is, again, not right or wrong, but it's an existential truth. It means we're in a different place. We're in a different context. We're living in a different way. We have different priorities or different things are important or meaningful for us. So this is, I think, one of the things which the monastic life offers to us, actually, ever since the Sangha has been formed. There's been both young people and old people within. We know from the Vinaya that there were young boys who were ordained, 7 or 8 years old, and also quite a lot of old people in the Sangha. And some of the bhikkhus who were regarded as being older than 100. So it's a community which can have a place for people of all these different ages, which I think is a very nice thing. And I think it's one of the sad things about modern society is that we tend to separate the ages too much. The young people off on one side, and often the young people don't have anything to do so much with the old people anymore. Traditional societies, of course, everyone's living in the same house in an extended family. These days we partition everything off. The kids run off and live by themselves. They don't even live with their parents. And grandparents are sort of shunted off into a nursing home or something. And I think that's all a bit sad, really, because we've all got a lot to learn from each other. And the elders have a lot to learn from young people. Young people have a lot to learn from the older people. And those of us who are in the middle can learn from both ends. So this is, I think, one of the lovely things about being in a monastery, is that we have people in the community from these different ages, and we can all learn from each other. Not necessarily learning, you know, when I say learning, I don't necessarily mean learning book learning or learning facts or things, but just learning about a sense of presence, a sense of being. There's different qualities that come with the different ages. And the quality of youth brings it itself a kind of an enthusiasm, a brightness, a freshness, and a lack of cynicism. And age brings with it a sense of evenness, a sense of not being swept up or pushed over by the latest thing that comes along. We've seen so many things coming and going. There's this kind of sense of just watching as the years come and go, people come and go. There's more of a kind of reflective sense about things. So these are the kind of different qualities which we can bring and which we can appreciate in each other. So as each day comes, we should reflect like that, reflect each morning as the start of another day. It means one less. We see that cycle from the freshness of the dawn to the calm of the twilight. The buzz of activity in the morning, the quietness of the evening. And that cycle of the birth, aging and death, it's happening to us all the time, it's happening to us every day. Every time we eat the meal, we're first presented with the food which is so fresh and so lovely, prepared with such care and such love. And then with a few minutes it's kind of broken up and demolished, chewed up, swallowed down. This job that we're doing in the morning, we start out looking forward to doing what we're doing, serving the Sangha, helping the community, helping the monastery. Gradually the task that we're doing gets finished, it's completed. Or if we're sitting meditation, the same thing, we come to sit, we start, we have that looking forward to the practice, the energy and the determination to focus on the meditation object, to develop the wholesome and abandon the unwholesome. And then gradually we're sitting and we experience whatever that session of meditation has to bring to us, whether good or bad, whether states of peace or agitation. We sit through that, we have the patience. We watch. And then it's over. It's finished, for better or for worse. What's done is done. What's undone will never be done. Next time we come to sit, it's another occasion, it's something else. Now if we're drinking a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, you start out looking forward to it, prepare it, wait for it to be cool enough to drink. And you drink it. You notice the first few sips, you really appreciate the taste of it. And then after a while it gets pretty bland and you don't really notice it, and you kind of drink it. The mind tends to drift, the attention tends to wander. And then after a while it's just the dregs at the bottom of the cup. And again, this is birth, aging and death is happening right there. Everything we see, if you're walking through the forest, you see the trees with all the marks of the years upon them. The bark peeling off, the leaves turning brown, all the signs of the aging and the growth process that they've been going through. And you can see the whole cycle there in the forest, can't you? You can see the little young saplings just growing, just sprouting. The strong trees of middle age. And then the dead and decaying branches and leaves on the forest floor. Everything is like that all the time. There's no exceptions. I don't know about you, but I get this feeling sometimes when I'm looking forward to something, when if there's something that I'm enjoying, I get this kind of longing to just hold it there, to just keep it. If only time would stop, I could just be doing this, and everything would be okay. But of course time doesn't stop, does it? That's what time is. Time is that which never stops. Time is the going. And so we want it just to be there forever, we want to stay there forever, but we just can't. One of the most powerful suttas on aging is where the Buddha was talking about one of the great teachers of old who used to teach on this all the time, saying that life was like a line drawn on the surface of water with a stick, or it was like a drop of water falling on a hot plate, or like the dew in the morning sun. So quickly life was used up, so quickly everything parted. And in this sutta, when the Buddha is talking about this teacher of old, he then, at the end of it, he sort of says, and in that time, monks, lifespan was, I think it was 60,000 years. Beings lived for 60,000 years, and still they said, life is so short, it's just like the life, a line drawn on the surface of water. And for our life, only 100 years or so. Nothing. Just nothing. You turn around and then it's gone. Another day, another week, another year, another life. And just as, you know, we can look at the days rolling past, we're staying in the monastery and the days are relatively even, relatively similar to each other. So we can watch the kind of the rolling of the days. You know, you think about it, if you step back another couple of steps in your perspective, that's what our lives are like. Our lives roll past just like that, one after the other, getting born in this realm or that realm, staying there for a while and then it's gone. On and on and on. Hundreds, thousands of lifetimes. Birth, aging and death. Just going on and on and on, repeating that cycle. This is why one of the Buddha's great insights was that the only escape from this is not through eternal life. Eternal life is a fool's notion. It never happened. What happens is that we can make an ending of birth. We can step outside of that cycle. Allow that to cease without anything else arising. This is what the Buddha called Nibbana, the escape from the round of samsara. So realizing Nibbana doesn't come from avoidance, doesn't come from trying to pretend that samsara is anything else than what it is. It comes from understanding it, fully knowing it. So all I've been talking about this evening is under the First Noble Truth, jati pi dukkha, jarapi dukkha, maranam pi dukkha. And the First Noble Truth, of course, is parinyaya, to be fully known. To be known all the way through. To be known all the way through. Parinyaya. So to fully know birth, aging and death. To understand that fully, this is the way to release from birth, aging and death. It's not just taking the bits that you want and getting rid of the bits that you don't want. But it's about understanding, transcending, going beyond the whole cycle itself. So this is my little talk for you this evening on aging. I offer this for your reflection. And I'd like to invite if there's any comments or questions. Okay, so let's finish up by paying respects.